Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, folks. Before we start today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast, I'd just like to remind you guys that you can check out my daily sports column. It's free by going to sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. You can just check out my Twitter to find the link there. Go check out chasethomaspodcast.com. There's a link on that page. But yeah, go check it out every day. New sports story in your email inbox. Yeah, go tell a friend, share it out, send it to anyone else you think would like the newsletter. But yes, every single day, go to sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Just Google Sports Renaissance Man, Chase Thomas, whatever you're most comfortable with, go do that. If you are an Apple Podcast listener, don't forget to leave this show a 5-star rating and a review. It's important to help the show continue to grow. And last thing, very quickly, but please email me at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com to get your mailbag question in, or any other questions that you might have about the show, about the column, anything like that. New mailbag columns go up every Friday. If you have any questions for the weekly shows that you would like us to answer on air, whether it's John Taylor on Wednesdays, Evan Swords on Mondays, the sports reporters on Fridays, make sure to get those questions in and we'll read them on the show, or I'll answer your questions in the mailbag on the newsletter. So go do that. Again, that's chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. Leave the show a 5-star rating and review. Follow on Apple Podcasts if you can. I think that's it. All right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, we're back on the Tuesday night edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast. I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I'm joined by one of my favorite basketball people. It's Coach David Thorpe of True Hoop, a very good website that you should subscribe to with Henry Abbott. If you have not already, by going to truehoop.com. It's a great newsletter. It's great stuff. Coach, good evening. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Hope you're well and safe.
Absolutely. With how much basketball you watch during the season, now that basketball is over temporarily, what do you find yourself doing? What does your off season from basketball look like?
Oh boy. So, I mean, I've been doing this a long time. Since 2007, when I first joined ESPN, my training business kind of kicks up when the NBA season starts winding down. And so I've got professional players here now. My son gets back on Friday from Florida State, where he plays for the team. And I'll be able to train him with my pros that are here until he'll leave in 2 weeks. And then I'll train guys. I'm watching the Olympics, Team USA. I've done a deep dive into the draft. And then free agency kicks in. Normally I would go to summer league, but, with COVID issues, I'm not traveling this year for that. I'll watch the games on TV and break those down. And then by the time my last player leaves to go back to get ready for NBA training camp. We're in mid-September. And that'll be a nice couple of weeks where I won't have to do any coaching. There's no games to watch. And I can just, you know, kind of take a two-week break from basketball. And then by once training camp starts, maybe September 28th, I'm back at it. So there's really, you know, if you studied my synergy charts, there's probably no, you know, 1 or 2 week period where I'm watching less games or players than I am, you know, any other time. So it really never really stopped except for maybe that 2 week stretch in September.
Do you get restless at all? Do you feel like out of place not watching basketball?
No. No. It's just part of my DNA now. I've been doing this for so long. And actually, the 2 weeks that I won't be watching NBA level stuff and high level pro stuff, I'll have some players overseas that their season starts, and I volunteer to help a lot of local programs, high school and one post grad program. So I'll be able to go do some of their workouts. As a favor, I'll train some of their players on their team, the whole team, and I mentor a lot of young coaches, and so and I'll do a lot of clinics and those kinds of things. Now basketball is, it's what I do for a living, so gotta go about doing my business.
Interesting. Last thing before we get into some actual NBA, so I'm curious. You mentioned we talked. I think the last time we talked to you, it was midseason for your son at Florida State. What has that adjustment been like for you? Because I don't talk to many people that actually have an active D1 athlete child. And when you're in the same business, do you, like we talked about, you were like Leonard a little bit, who still looks incredible for his age. I still blow people's minds. I'm like, do you know how old that man is? Like, if we could all age that way. And he's built a really great program there now, and it looks pretty sustainable, and like Scotty Barnes is awesome. So we'll see. But, do you have a texting relationship? Like, do you ask, do you feel like it's inappropriate to ask? Like, how does that work with your son and coach? And like, if your son asks you something, like how, I'm just curious. You don't have to answer it if you're uncomfortable with this, by the way.
No, I'm happy to answer it. It's a great question. I've known the coaches at Florida State for decades, but I've known the coaches from a lot of schools for a long time. And I greatly respect the coach player, relationship. So I ask my son and I probably text or talk most days, certainly not every day, but during the season, it's probably close to daily. And it's mostly focused on his teammates. But that is something we started a long time ago when he was a player. I used to go to most of his practices. And then as he got into 10th grade and 11th grade, I stopped going so much. And instead, I would just ask him, how did his teammates play? You know, to be a leader, you have to learn to breathe spirit in the hearts and minds of others. And if I wanted my son to be a leader, then he had to start paying attention to how other players were feeling, were doing, were playing. And so I would never really ask him about him. I would ask about his teammates and get him thinking about them. And so that hasn't changed. I mean, he's just a sophomore now, really a kind of sense a redshirt freshman almost. He'll still play 4 years. I'll ask how the guys are doing, who's playing well, who's struggling, how's the team looking, those kinds of things. I think I spoke to the coaches twice during the season, and both times they would call me for one reason or another, and I would tell my son, yeah, I spoke to your coaches, and he'd always say like, oh no, coach, dad, what did I do wrong? And I was like, nothing, you didn't do anything wrong. I'm friends with these guys. We were catching up. But, my son knows not to tell me any locker room stuff. His allegiance is to his program. And so I don't know any secrets. Certainly if I did, I would never say them publicly, but no, I don't want my son to tell me anything outside of, more basic stuff. Obviously if someone's shooting well or not well, you know, we're talking, he would do this no matter where he was. And I never call to check up on him. I just always assume if the coaches call me, it's because he's bleeding somewhere or hurt, or he really screwed up. And so luckily none of those things happen. But their job is not, as I told my son, it's not fair for me to check up on him because I could, whereas other parents necessarily can't because they don't have that kind of relationship. Not that they couldn't call to their coaches. Of course they could, but they just aren't friendly the way I am with those guys. So no, I respect that relationship. And I think my son probably appreciates that. I understand how that dynamic is. I've done this a long time. So we'll talk about the team. We'll talk about college. We'll talk about the NBA. He loves the NBA. And I'll ask him a lot of questions about their upcoming opponents, especially from an NBA perspective. He hopes to work in the NBA one day. And so I want to get his take on, what do you think of the kids at Duke or North Carolina or whoever they're playing? And I've always felt like, you know, he has a twin sister, so I have a daughter. And she and I have a very different kind of relationship because she doesn't play basketball. She was a dancer. Mm-hmm. So, but basketball is a language of love. Both my son and I speak very intimately. So if we ever had a quiet meal, all I have to do is say, hey, where do you think Ben Simmons is going to go? And that'll start up an hour long conversation. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I didn't do this on purpose. I didn't tell him to choose basketball. He made that choice, but I'm glad he did, because it's never a dull moment, he and I. We could talk movies, we could talk basketball, and never have a quiet time. So, no, I feel very fortunate that he loves the game that I love. And I think he's got a really good head in his shoulders as to what matters most about this game. Relationships are what's, I think, most important. And he would argue, as much as I would, that, you know, his life is far richer because he plays basketball. So he and I have that in common.
That's awesome. Now I feel weird about transitioning out of this. That was really heartfelt. Now I'm just like, let me do a callous NBA question. But with all the games that you watched, from your perspective, Coach, what playoff series, like before any of the games happened, surprised you the most with the outcome?
Oh, that's a good one. I think I got most of them right. The fact that Portland was so bad against Denver was surprising for sure. I did not see that coming. And I think that I wasn't surprised that the Jazz lost, because you just have to realize how important it's not hard to realize how important Donovan Mitchell was to that team. But Mike Conley was every bit as valuable, if not even more valuable. Less dynamic as a player, probably more valuable overall. And Mike being out for as long as he was, and then Donovan recovering, you know, from his injury in the playoffs, just kind of knocked them for a loop. But the Jazz were the best team in the league, and quite frankly, should have won the championship. If everyone is healthy, because it's unfair to say, well, if the Jazz were healthy, they would have won, because Lakers had injuries, the Nets had injuries. I thought it'd be a Nets-Jazz final, and I thought the Jazz had a great shot to beat Brooklyn because of Rudy. And just being able to defend those guys. And so the fact that they lost the Clippers without Kawhi in those two games, that surprised me too. But no, I would say Portland just melting against the Nuggets. So other than that, I thought things went pretty, like, I thought the Hawks would win that first round. So I guess maybe Hawks Philadelphia was pretty surprised. Yeah, I had the Hawks winning against the Knicks. I thought they could beat the Sixers, depending on how Joel Embiid, his health. And I don't think he was healthy. I don't think he was moving great defensively. He was great offensively. I thought he was not himself defensively, and they needed that from him. And then, of course, Ben Simmons was terrible. So I didn't think – again, I thought the Hawks would win if Embiid wasn't really healthy. So, yeah, I guess Portland melting to Denver the way they did was pretty shocking.
Do you – like, this was in the order of operations here, but you brought up a team I'm quite familiar with, the Atlanta Hawks. Do you think this is – here to stay? And also, do you think if Trey doesn't fall or step on the official's foot, rather, they win that series against Milwaukee, and Milwaukee's not raising an NBA title right now? Do you think it that flipped the series?
No.
Or do you think they would? Okay.
Yeah, I thought Milwaukee was beginning to grab a hold of the best ways to beat Atlanta. It was a good series, and certainly Atlanta could have won one more game. And they could have won the whole thing. They couldn't have won the whole series anyway, but no, I thought the better team won, whether Trey got hurt or not. I just made it easier. But no, I think Atlanta is legit. If DeAndre Hunter is healthy for them, that's a big deal. It's why I thought they had a great chance to beat the Knicks, is because I thought he would guard Julius Randle better than what John Collins did during the year. And as it turns out, Collins was better in the postseason too, defensively.
Yeah. So
I thought Nate did a great job. What's that?
Did that surprise you, John Collins' postseason play? Because he was pretty up and down. No, as someone who watched a lot, he is the hardest hawk to figure out. And the restricted free agency with him is going to be so fascinating. And he picked the perfect time to become a restricted free agent. It wasn't by design, but he really looked out because he might be the most appetizing guy out there this summer. It's pretty wild.
I think they need him. I hope they pay him. I think they need him. He's not easy to replace. And he's still a young guy. Like, you know, this is not just a linear ascension in this league. It's a roller coaster. And you go up and down and up and down, and you hope your ups get higher over the years and your downs get not quite as low as they were when you were younger. So I think they're on schedule to be a serious contender for a while.
True or false, Cam Reddish is putting up almost identical numbers to Paul George in 3 years during that same window for Paul George in Indiana.
I mean, probably false. Paul George was really, really good.
Yeah.
If Cam Reddish could do it, great. It's certainly possible.
Are you a Cam Reddish guy?
I didn't really watch him enough. It's hard for me, these freshmen that barely play. They're just so young, you know, it's tough to really gauge them because they just don't have a lot of minutes and experiences. Clearly he has a lot of talent. I was impressed with him in the postseason. I certainly think he's got a great upside. I like the trade, to get him with Trey. And, they've got a nice assortment of good young players with good veterans. You know, Gallo was disappointing to me for much of the postseason. He had his moments, but he's got, hopefully Cam could take his spot in the sense, or DeAndre can, as he kind of ages out, I think, of his best effectiveness. But Trey, I love Capella. Trey, I'm a big Herder fan. I think he's got a lot of Ray Allen in him. Mm. And he's a good player. They've got to add some depth, as a lot of teams do, but you know, Nate really gets guys to defend. I think Trey and Nate are a perfect combination because as good as I think Nate is defensively and culture building, I don't think he's very imaginative on offense. Mm-hmm. And with Trey, you just got to let him loose and he'll do the rest. And so it's a nice combination, I think. That's going to be an enjoyable experience for you guys.
It is funny that you say that because that was like something when you read the quotes and you look at the relationship and the reporting on it, and I'm like, so the reason this works is because Trey doesn't, he found a coach that doesn't want to coach him on offense. Like that's what the coaching is. He's just like, I trust Trey. And that flipped the switch. I'm like, I don't think that's an indictment on Lloyd for trying to coach Trey. Like, I think that's one of those things where I wonder if we have to reevaluate in a couple of years. And I mean, he's now an assistant in Golden State, and I hope he gets another shot because he was dealt just a horrid hand for 2 years. But I don't know. I saw that. Like, the reporting on it is just fascinating to me because I think Nate's good. He had some questionable adjustments in this postseason. He made some interesting choices, I would say, by and large, and sticking to his guns and being a little apprehensive to play certain guys mega minutes. He kind of had some bud learning curve there where it's just like, no, you just got to keep Trey in there. What are we doing? Why is Trey sitting at the end of the third and the beginning of the fourth? Like the every minute matters with him off the floor. And I don't know. There's some things like and things not like. The best coaching job you saw these playoffs, who do you think pulled off the best coaching job in the postseason?
I mean, obviously Bud did great. He won the championship, and I thought he made some key decisions that worked out well. But I would probably lean to Ty Lue. I mean, to do what he did he played, I think it was 56 or 58 different rotations within the first, like, you know, 10 games of the playoffs. He tried everything possible. He looked all sorts of defensive looks, big, small, big, in the Jazz series. He just wasn't married to anything, no pride. He just, whatever worked great. If it didn't work, let's try something else. And he was great. Yeah, I thought he was really impressive considering they were missing their best player. So, and you saw, Terrence Mann had a coming out party. Zubac was really, really good in a lot of stretches. Reggie Jackson was unbelievable. The players, of course, get the lion's share of the credit, but coach and system and culture, all those are factored in. So yeah, I thought Ty was fantastic. Like, I think Ty should be our next Team USA coach because I think we need to have a pragmatic guy in these games. And I think he's, I don't know if he has any interest, probably not, but yeah, I think he's really, really good.
Have you watched all the USA games?
Well, we played one. I don't really watch exhibitions very much because they're exhibitions. Yeah. So I did watch the first game live, mm-hmm. and the next one, I think tonight at 12:40 a.m. And so they went in the morning. I may watch it. I haven't decided yet. I'll tape it if I don't.
Mm-hmm. What did you glean from the France loss, if anything?
Well, when Durant sucks and Lillard sucks, Team USA is not a really good team. And I thought we defended really, really well for much of the game. I thought we made a tactical mistake of switching everything, which gave France an identity offensively. They just wanted to pound the paint the entire time against kind of our lack of size. We really only have Bam inside. He's not a great rim protector as it is. So I thought if France is big, the biggest team in the tournament, we're small. I thought that was a mistake. I thought we should have mixed up our coverages more so they couldn't necessarily just pound it inside against us. But the bottom line is when Evan Fournier outplays Durant and Lillard, you know, and Rudy Gobert's in the game, you have a chance to lose. When Rudy Gobert was a rookie in summer league, I wrote that he's going to be on the team. He's the kind of player that'll be on the team that first beats a Team USA team. And then in 2015, I tweeted kind of the same thing, that basically he's going to be on a team that beats Team USA, whatever my tweet was, something like that. And now he's beaten him twice, because when he's in the game, you just really can't score inside very much. And so it becomes a shooting contest. And it's just so much more pressure to make shots in these games when you're playing for a country and not for money. It's the same thing in the Ryder Cup in golf. I've read books about the Ryder Cup, and these world's greatest players admit they just feel so much more pressure when they're putting for us instead of just putting for me and money. For whatever reason, it's just how it is. And I think the Olympics are the same. So when we can't get a bunch of paint shots against a team that's got Rudy on it, and we don't shoot well from three, we're capable of losing those games. So I still think Team USA can win the whole thing. Doesn't mean they will, but they got to play better. Middleton didn't barely play. He had just got there. Holiday was amazing. I don't think Booker really is a great fit for this team, but I don't love how we're constructed. I think we're too small. And we only have one real center that can play. Jeremy Grant didn't play because of, I think, COVID protocols. We really do guard, and we force turnovers, and we make things tough. I think it's a very defensive-minded team that does have a chance to dominate more going forward. I don't think Iran probably can be competitive. But they only lost by four, I think, to Czech Republic. So if we can blow Iran out, it's a good chance we can blow Czech Republic out, get out of pool play, and then we're going to be favored in every game we play. We just got to play better. We just didn't play very well.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'm not a big Olympics guy. I have not watched it. I probably won't. And also, I kind of need a break. And there's just a lot of sports I still have to watch, and the Braves are on every night, seemingly. Ben Simmons, you mentioned that he, quote, sucked this postseason, coach. And it was rough. He's not picking up the phone, or he's hard to reach. Per the latest report on him and the Sixers, for you, when you watched this meltdown, you watched just how terrified he became in the series. That, like, do you think he is capable at this point in his career to be rewired, to gain that confidence again, to develop something else in his game, to become a different kind of player? Or from your experience, do you think at this point, it's just, it's not realistic to expect him to rework his game or change stuff up? And also, just like friend of the pod, Scott Rafferty, made this point, and I think it's an astute one, is that, like, even if he does start shooting, teams are still going to play off him. Like, they're still going to leave him open. Like, even if he's shooting 32, 30, like, it doesn't open up your offense anymore for Ben to actually take these, because they're still going to leave him open unless he's shooting like 40%, which is unlikely. And then you have the whole question of whether or not he's shooting with the wrong hand, all that kind of stuff. But it's just so frustrating with somebody like him, because if he was a even average to good shooter, he's a top three player in basketball, like maybe top two. And if he's not, then like if you use him the correct way, he's like Draymond, a souped up version of Draymond. So it's like that's still a really great Hall of Fame worthy player, and he's still on that trajectory if he plays close to what he's like for the next 10 years. And then you're just like, what? I don't, it's just so confusing, and there's so many different variables involved here. But like for you, what do you think as a coach is the most realistic expectation for growth from Ben Simmons from here on out?
I mean, in theory, he can definitely get so much better. There's no question in my mind. He can be a dramatically different player. And even if you don't learn to shoot a three, but can make free throws better, that'll give him so much more courage to make plays at the rim without fear of missing free throws. You know, Giannis doesn't play with fear. And he can't shoot free throws. In fact, Ben was probably even a better free throw shooter during the regular season. He just really got some mental issues and needs some guidance and needs some, he needs the intervention, so to speak. I don't have a lot of confidence that NBA teams know what they're doing with this kind of stuff. I'm friendly with the team president in Philadelphia. He's a great guy and a super smart guy, but I don't think Daryl dealt with this a lot. But Ben needs some help. Ben needs some professional therapy, in a sense, to turn himself around. LeBron needed it after his terrible finals against Dallas in 2011, I think it was, whenever his first finals was in Miami. And then he went to, you know, three straight finals and won the next two. I think that he's probably not going to reach his full potential. At least half the league didn't reach their full potential. He just happens to have a higher upside than most, so it's disappointing that way. But it's possible. He's 25. He's got lots of time to grow as a player. And he doesn't have to shoot threes. If you have a great shooter on your team and they're not guarding you, then just screen and pop or screen and roll. And if your big isn't guarding you, the shooter can come off that screen wide open. This is what Draymond does for Steph Curry all the time. So there's ways to play around it. There's ways to play Ben Simmons more like Giannis. I wrote an article about on Troop that they should do that. But it starts with him not being afraid to get fouled. So that's what I focus on most, is not his three, but his free throw. And then his mindset of wanting to get to the line and wanting to lead the league in foul in free throws attempted. And, it's a process to change someone's mentality.
I was going to say, do you think he's wired like that?
You rewire him. I've been coaching a long time, and we all are born with instincts, and but instincts are learned. You're not just born with them. So our instinct is to always touch fire when we're one, but by the age of two, we don't touch fire anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Our instinct is just to cross the road without looking, but we're then taught the instinct of always check to see left and right where cars are coming. Basketball, the instinct is players love to drive into traffic, they love to drive the baseline. There's a lot of instincts in basketball that we coach out of players. And so it's just we're rewiring them. So there's no reason why you can't rewire Ben Simmons.
Where do you think is the best basketball fit for him if it's not Philadelphia? Where is he most likely to get rewired? And the best coaching staff?
Golden State would be good, probably. The Spurs would be good. I think they've done a good job over the years in helping players like them. It really depends on the coach, not the franchise. I have a longtime assistant that now is an assistant coach. He's actually the head G League coach for the Pelicans. His name is Ryan Pinone. And Ryan may be with another NBA team soon on the bench, or he might be with the Pelicans on the bench for the NBA, or still coaching the BayHawks. But Ryan Pinone would turn Ben Simmons around. And there's other guys like Ryan that could do it. You just got to find him. It's not the franchise. It's an individual person that can reach him. The best thing about the show Ted Lasso is it kind of gives a name to that phenomenon, which is to use love and culture to get players to reach a higher level. And so, in a sense, guys like Ryan Pinone could Ted Lasso Ben Simmons and bring out the best version of him. And you got to go find guys like that and put them with people like Ben Simmons.
I think Portland still is my favorite idea. Like, I would love to see Damon Embiid in a postseason series and what that would look like. And I would love to see.
We all do.
Yeah.
We all want that. I don't know if it'll happen, but yeah, that's That's absolutely the most, that's probably the most likely trade scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, each team wants an all-star, and so Dame, you know, scratches the itch for Philadelphia, and Ben does the same thing for a terrible defensive team in Portland.
Right. Yeah. Something that I think is interesting that we just kind of overlook with the Pelicans, I wanted to get your perspective on this too, because I think the Pelicans are getting a lot of grief right now with the rebuilds thus far. We know what David Griffin's capable of. David Griffin is a good general manager. It's hard building a good basketball team, it turns out, coach. And Zion and Brandon Ingram are an odd fit. They're just kind of weird. He inherited that. But Zion, when he plays and with his style, like, he's dominant, there's just nothing you can do inside. Ingram fell off a little bit this year, but we saw the all-star Brandon Ingram, top 15 player potentially, consistently 2 years ago. But you have guys like Bledsoe, and you saw that, I mean, Stan talked about it, like, just not reaching them defensively, like, just did not reach this group of players. So they're bad, and he's gone. But I just wonder, like, is there a way that they can, like, I don't think Jonas Valanciunas solves this. I don't think Nickeil Alexander solves any of this. Like, I wonder, like, even if you sign and trade Lonzo, like, whatever happens there, I just think it's always going to be difficult to figure out the right recipe with these two. Is that how you feel when you watch these two on the court together? Or do you think it's more one player than the other that's more difficult to figure out the right five guys to surround them with, or four guys rather, to surround them with? Like, what do you make of that duo and what you've seen from both of them thus far that makes it maybe potentially really difficult to field a good team in the West?
Oh, I love them as a duo. Okay. I think there's a lot like Giannis and Middleton, just younger. I would play the way the Bucks played in the finals. I would have lots of Zion screen and roll. Zion is a primary ball handler, using ball screens and playing just basketball. He's such a talented all-around player. A lot of early steals for Zion, rolling to the 13 feet, he can jump so high. Ingram can be a great fourth quarter scorer like Middleton. He's such a good mid range player. He can get a shot off against anyone. You got to get a big that plays with Zion that can shoot threes. So that's why I thought Steven Adams was a disastrous pick. Although their offense wasn't terrible, their defense that was so bad, they were 10th in offense. Mm. So because they feature Zion in the perimeter as an attacker. But I like, how Milwaukee plays with Portis. In fact, I'd go after Portis if I was them. I think those guys can be fantastic together. I happen to like Lonzo. I think they're going after Kyle Lowry, and that'll be fine. I don't love Lowry for them because, defensively, well, he was bad last year defensively for him, and that might be age or it might be his team sucked. It could be the latter. So, he just didn't really care. Because normally he's a better fighter than he was this past season. But you got to get better players. They've had a bunch of bad players and average players. And I love Coach Van Gundy, but he did not do a good job on the defensive side of the ball. They had some structural things in terms of their systems that weren't great and what they were trying to take away. And he's just a negative guy. And the team needs, I think, a more positive vibe. I think they have the right guy in Coach Green. I think he'll build a good culture. I think guys will like to play for him. And they just got to grow. Valanciunas is a good player. He's better offensively than defensively. And again, defense is their problem. But maybe Coach Green will, kind of coach them up differently and come up with a better strategy for them defensively overall. And that'll help.
Last thing I want to ask you about, because SGA is popping up in lottery questions, like whether or not the Thunder will package him in their, one of their picks for number one or something like that. I watch a lot of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I've been a big SGA guy. I love watching him play. He's different. Like, he's a different player to watch, and he's someone that is an appointment viewing for me on League Pass, because I just think he's really, really fascinating, and him developing a shot, just he was incredibly intriguing, and he's playing a different style. And I always was curious when he was coming out if his game was going to be good enough for today's NBA versus what it was 15 years ago. When you watch SGA, do you think he, because we haven't seen it now, like, we've never really seen him play, like, him playing next to Chris Paul was really great. Him, Paul, and Schroeder were just really fun, and it was weird. But, like, what do you think he can actually be? Can he be a top 15 player in this league? Is there one particular skill you think he'll be elite at? What do you make of him, and do you think we'll get to see him on a contender sooner than later? And will he be someone that, like, oh, casual fans are just like, oh, this guy is absolutely a difference maker on a contender to get them over the top. Like a Drew Holiday, honestly.
I love him. I think he's got a higher upside than Drew. And I coached Drew for the draft. So I know how talented he is. I love Say. He can be a big-time scorer. He can be an excellent defender. He's long and athletic and kind of does things the right way, plays the right way, seems super coachable. I think he's a really, really talented guy. And I have no idea. I couldn't even begin to guess what they'll do. It's certainly, you know, you can argue that they'd be best off using their picks to bring talent in to play with Shea, who's, you know, 23 years old. He's young. But I don't know that they will. They might, you know, they might just play one more year and then maybe trade him because they're going to get a lot of stuff for him. But I think he's ready to help a team win. Like, he's going to his fourth season. He was a top 5% NBA. It would be 95th percentile on offense last year overall, and estimated plus minus. Yeah, pretty average defensively, but, you know, playing with really young, not very good players, it's not easy to play defense. But Rudy Gobert would not have been the defensive player of the year playing for the Thunder. They've got some good young talent there, but I'm not sure that any of them really are long-term guys that definitely make it, except for maybe Lou Dort, who I like.
Not Poku.
So, yeah, maybe they
Coach
do.
Coach David Thorpe, not that? Poku guy.
No, I mean, I watched him play in the G League. I mean, I understand the attraction to it, but ultimately...
The only reason I'm attracted to him, Coach, I'm going to be completely honest. As a tall, lanky, super skinny guy who runs every day, you love to see somebody in the NBA like you. You don't see it very often.
Yeah, he's got to learn to play the way Kyle Anderson has learned to play. He's become an elite defensive player that's a solid offensive player. If he could do that, I'm not sure he can, but if he can, fine. He's young. I mean, I'm not suggesting it can't happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, Shea's ready to be Devin Booker. Mm. And that's game he's not going to be. So it's going to be time to let him go play with a, you know, this is what I think players are going to do more and more is they're going to get their extension because they earn it. And they're going to say, now move me to somewhere where I can go actually play meaningful games and not play for this garbage year in, year out for 3 or 4 years. While you just collect, you know, assets, picks, and whatever, and keep your job. So, I think Sam will. I know Sam Presti a long time. I think he's aware of that. He really builds an amazing culture. It's first class for sure. And he's going to probably this year say, oh, well, you know, they're going to get an extension for him, I would guess. And then at some point, if they still can't make any kind of deal to get better, then it's time to let him go and just get even more picks for him and. And then build with whatever the players they have.
Okay. Last thing, really quickly. This is going to clairvoyant David Thorpe. This is the moment right here. We'll revisit when you're back next year. The next young player to really get it is going to be who? And by get it, I mean you've seen flashes. There's been moments, but like they figured it out, and they're going to be a really good player for a long time.
Well, I don't know if you count him or not, but I think Zion is going to be a monster next year.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to make the leap next year the way Luka made the leap this year, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know how courageous that is, but yeah, I think that new coach, no, hopefully not a COVID season where they actually can watch film and not be in such a condensed schedule. It looks like I saw the schedule outlined today. It looks good. I think he's going to get MVP votes this coming season.
Okay. I'm excited. He's a delight to watch. Zion is an absolute great. Delight to watch. Coach Thorpe, what can we check out from you at True Hoop this week and anything else you would like to plug as we wrap up here tonight?
Yeah, no, just publishing something tomorrow on the draft, my favorite players in the draft, and then we'll do a podcast Friday, but I'm bringing it in 11 o'clock live, and then we'll post it up later, recapping the draft Thursday night. It'll be fun.
I love that y'all are doing that again. As someone who grew up in college and high school watching the True Hoop videos, hearing the fuzzy sound, you don't get that on this, but like the TV static and then going, it's weird that is like just hardwired into my brain now. I'm glad it's back. So go check that out if you've not already. TrueHoop.com. Find all of David's work and also get his book. I have it. It's good. Basketball is Jazz. Go check that out as well.
Yes, please, at Amazon. Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely, absolutely. David Thorpe, thank you so much for making the time. I will talk to you soon.
Thanks, JCK.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.